Okay, well, I guess so. I'll do a little opening to tell you just who I am very briefly, and Chris can do the same, and then we'll just sort of have a conversation. And I think I'd encourage people to sort of jump in with questions anytime. We'll try to leave some time at the end just for general questions, but if people have questions as we're going along, jump in. I'm a native New Yorker, transplanted to California in 2000. So I figure this is kind of like retribution somehow for this storm, for my having abandoned New York. But I was a journalist for most of my life. I worked for Newsday for 19 years, and then I worked for the Los Angeles Times. And I've moved from being a journalist to a recovering journalist to an author and independent historian, which is now what I call myself. And I got involved in writing about farm workers through a series that I did for the Los Angeles Times that was mostly about the United Farm Workers today and what has become of the union. And we can talk later if anybody wants about those issues. But in doing that and in trying to understand what had become of the UFW, I started to look back at the history. And it's a sort of unique period of time about which there exists this tremendous sort of archive of material and documentation, and people really regard it now as history and are willing to talk about it in that sense. And yet, many of the principal figures who were involved in that movement are still alive. So for me, it was a real opportunity to sort of go back and forth between documents and people. And the reason that I wrote the book was that as I met people who had been involved in the farm worker movement, almost uniformly, and this is whether they worked for the union for 6 months or for 6 years, they regarded it as the most important part of their lives and at a time that had really just transformed them. And people, I still meet people all over the place who say, you know, I would not be doing what I'm doing, I would not be the person that I am today if not for the experience that I had in the UFW. And so I was kind of fascinated by what was this movement that was so powerful that it had this impact on all of these people and changed their lives. And they came from all of these different worlds, and that applied to farm workers who were involved in the movement at that time, and to ministers, lawyers, students, etc. It was just this sort of fascinating array of people at a moment of time. And the other reason that I became involved in writing the book was that it was clear to me and to many of the people who had lived through it, that a lot of this history had not been told, and there are a lot of reasons for that. But people were sort of haunted 30 and 40 years ago by things that they had done, experiences they had had, decisions they made, and by the ultimate sort of failure of the union to become a successful labor organization that continued to do what it had done at one point in time. I'm trying to do this in a way that doesn't presume any understanding of the history, but also kind of touches on some of the issues that we'll get to. So I wanted to sort of understand what had happened and how this group of people, who all went on to do many other things and there was a real legacy of the UFW in many fields, but not necessarily in the literal fields themselves. So I wanted to write about the movement, and that's what this is. It is and the reason that I wanted to come here and do this program with Chris is because this is very much a book about a social movement and about organizing and about both the successes and the failures of that movement. And I think that there's a lot that can be learned from it and can be discussed, and things that are applicable not only to farm worker organizing, but to organizing in general. It's a book that's about 8 people, and it tells the story through 8 characters. Chris is probably in it more than anyone else, right? Because you were in the movement longer than anyone else. So do you want to say anything, or do you want to just start with how you got from Union to California and went from being an urban?
I'll tell them that. Well, for those of you who have children, Pudge and I lived in McGifford Hall. My wife, Jane, who was nicknamed Pudge. We had 2 children here and 2 more later. And I graduated in 1960. Bruce Hansen was here at the same time. Richard Cook later on. Phil Farnham a little later, not much. And what year?
I started 61.
And so anyway, all the time I was here, I worked in the East Harlem Protestant Parish. George Todd was my first boss at Church of the Ascension on 106th Street. And when we graduated, that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to do it really bad. And my wife went along, and we moved over to East Harlem and lived on the 14th floor of a low-income housing project, which was 14th floor was, you know, cold in the winter and hot in the summer. So I was the minister to youth at the Church of the Resurrection, which is a UCC-related church. And I don't know. I loved what I was doing. I was working with teenagers. One of those teenagers was over at visiting George yesterday while I was there. But it was difficult for my wife, and because partway through our time in East Harlem, she was assaulted in an elevator when she had Janie, her daughter, in her arms, and molested. And she kind of lost her feeling of being at home in East Harlem. I mean, it was hard, you know, if you're in the 14th floor and it snows and everybody gets dressed up in their snow suits, right? And you go down 14 floors and they go out and play, and of course they're tired and wet in 10 minutes, and then you're all back up to the 14th floor. But anyway, that wasn't the big issue. The big issue is she lost her feeling of being home. And it took me a while. I was kind of full of myself and full of what I was doing, and I loved it, but it took me a while to realize that as a family, we weren't going to make it here. And just about that same time, the director of the California Migrant Ministry in California, who I knew, was going to move to Chicago, and he came after me to be his successor and sicked the National Council of Churches on me, since they were here in New York and I was here in New York, to persuade me to go to California. And I did. I was a very reluctant dragon. I didn't look forward to the idea of the administrative responsibility of being a director of an ecumenical agency. But for various reasons. Have any of you from California? You know California? Okay, well, driving into Los Angeles on the San Bernardino Freeway, we would pass all these pink houses, yellow houses, pale blue houses. I thought, oh my God. I almost turned around and headed back east, but we stayed. And not too long after that, I met Cesar Chavez. Well, in fact, Doug Still, my predecessor, gave me a list of people I had to do one-on-ones with. And there were a lot of church people, bishops, others, but at the top of the list was Cesar Chavez and Fred Ross, senior. And so I met them, and they explained all what they were doing with the community service organization and invited me to come to their board meetings in there. And, you know.
Why don't you explain what CSO was?
Oh, yeah, community service organization was begun by Fred Ross with the support of Saul Alinsky and the Industrial Areas Foundation. And it was basically barrio-based community organization in Los Angeles, I mean, in California and Arizona. And they worked on anything that happened in the community, you know, street lights, voter registration, dealing with politicians, etc.
Hospitality, schools. It was a really early model of community organization. That
yeah, a very important movement. And so I got kind of interested, involved, and then very shortly, Caesar left the CSO to organize farm workers, because that's where he came from, that's where his roots were, that's what he's most passionate about, that's what he wanted to do. And so he and Helen and their 8 children moved from Los Angeles to Delano, in part because they had family there, and began to build this National Farm Workers Association, which in time became the United Farm Workers. And the migrant ministry staff, I was director of the migrant ministry, we had staff all over the state doing mostly, you know, what church people do with very poor people. daily vacation Bible schools, educational programs, health educational programs, showing movies, playing with kids, you name it, we did it. If you could think of anything, we did it. And just on the side, the National Migrant Ministry will be 90 years old this year. Began in 1920. And they have migrant ministries in New York and other places, and so.
But you changed the role of the migrant ministry pretty dramatically.
Well, yes. Can you hear her questions? She keeps mumbling to me things I need to say, and you're right, I should.
No, I mean.
It was an interesting process. Doug Still's predecessor, who became the director of the American Bible Society and was a relatively conservative Presbyterian guy, got a grant from the Schwarzkopf Foundation in Chicago to train migrant ministry staff people in community organization, which meant our staff went for like 6 weeks with Caesar and Fred as they organized the CSO. And I did the same thing when I arrived there. But when I arrived, almost all migrant ministry staff had this experience with community organization and with what it was in comparison or in contrast to what our work was. So everybody knew Caesar, everybody cared about what he was doing. I mean, anybody driving in the San Joaquin Valley would stop in Delano to see what was happening. Caesar came to our staff retreats. Sometimes Helen also came to our staff retreats. And from the beginning, I mean, this is a very, very smart man, right? From the beginning, I think he's thinking of the day when he's going to need church support for what he's doing. And he loved us dearly, but he also had that in his mind.
Can you talk a little bit, explain what Caesar was doing at that point in time?
Yeah. He was basically going community to community and holding house meetings, personal visits and house meetings to discover the farm workers in that community that were willing to participate in the organization of farm workers no matter how long it took. Not in a union at first, because the word kind of scared a lot of farm workers, but it was an association which they paid dues to, and they got a death benefit insurance policy from it, and they had conventions and meetings. And so it was a beginning effort to organize farm workers for the long haul, for when it would be possible to actually build a union and win a fight. And we watched it, we saw what was happening, we believed in it, we cared about it, nobody thought it could possibly happen, but Caesar seemed determined. He made one of those, you know, like commitments that most of us don't ever make in our lives, and that was, and he and Helen together, we're going to organize a farm workers movement no matter how long it takes. The rest of our lives, perhaps. And it turned out to be the truth. So that commitment and his skill and his personal charisma kind of kept us close and kept us supporting and kept us wanting to know more and more and more.
And at what point did you realize that this was someplace you wanted to be?
Oh. Yeah, because I didn't want to be there at first. It was as I got involved in the community service organization, I could just see that there was more to this than being, you know, a bureaucrat, an administrator of a program with 12, 15 staff people, and it just became more and more interesting. And then in 1965.
All right, so let's stop. So the strike, the great strike starts in 1965, mm-hmm. and you have to make a decision about what the role of the migrant ministry is going to be.
Yeah. Filipino farm workers went on strike in Delano in 1965. The Mexican-American farm workers joined that strike in September of 1965, and Caesar immediately asked me to be helpful in specific ways. You know, money for gas, because people had to go to the picket line every day. Food for the families, because they're going to lose their incomes. Staff to help him in Delano. That's where you started, right, Phil?